This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. Sees if you try.
Couldn't vote for a person who was an atheist.
I'm opposed to having a brother and sister be together and call that marriage. I'm opposed to an older guy marrying a child and calling that a marriage. I'm opposed to one guy having multiple wives and calling that marriage.
Do you think those are equivalent to gays getting married?
Oh, I do.
Well, that was Reverend Rick Warren, of course, and I'm opposed to him being selected by President-elect Barack Obama to with this great honor of delivering the invocation at the inauguration. We'll be talking a lot more about that on today's Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're your antidote to the religious right.
And this show is produced by the National Freedom From Religion Foundation. If you are an atheist or an agnostic or a non-believer and you're concerned about keeping state and church separate, then join our group. We have more than 13,000 members around the country working hard to protect the wonderful American principle of religious liberty and separation of state and church.
We hope you're hunkering down this weekend somewhere cozy here in Madison, Wisconsin. We're approaching a record, I think, 40 inches of snow. It's breaking records for the month. We hope you're safely out of the ice and snow and flooding and freezing that's happening in so many parts of
the country.
The
nice thing is my muscles are getting really big from shoveling
this
last few weeks.
And our last show of 2008, we're going to have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We're going to be analyzing what's wrong with having prayers at the inauguration by anybody, much less by Reverend Rick Warren.
And later in the show, we'll be playing some theatrical clips. For fun, the Proposition 8 Prop 8 musical comedy, Hollywood actors and comedians got together to put on a show to lambast the religious right. And in a obviously more serious vein, we'll listen to some riveting moments from the terrific play God on Trial, which was broadcast on PBS's Masterpiece Contemporary recently, imagining what would have been said had Auschwitz prisoners put God on trial. And it's very good stuff.
So let's dig into the Reverend Rick Warren controversy now, Dan. There's so much to say that's so wrong about this. It's such an insult and an affront to gays and lesbians. Right after Proposition 8 was passed, to have this pastor, Rick Warren, who's a fundamentalist, who recorded a commercial telling his 22,000-member congregation to vote for Proposition 8. It's such an affront for the president-elect to choose him to open with an invocation. But there's a lot more than that that's wrong with this.
And not just lesbians and gays, but of course us non-believers. He's also opposed to us. He wouldn't even vote for us for public office, he says.
And we also have Reverend Warren's record that he thinks that, he's not only anti-abortion, and he not only uses that highly inflammatory, hysterical wording that legal abortion is like a Holocaust, but when someone said, well, shouldn't we work to keep abortion safe and rare? Rick Warren said, no. I mean, in other words, he doesn't care if it's ubiquitous and unsafe. This is a fanatical viewpoint, and it's degrading to American women to think that he would be giving the opening invocation at the inauguration.
Yeah, and anybody can have a quote-unquote purpose-driven life, but you should have a good purpose when you're going to have your life driven by purpose. And this purpose of his to discriminate, to alienate, to tell many of us that we are not good enough to even be in his own community. That's
his church, un-American. His church doesn't allow you to join if you're homosexual, even though they took that off the website. That's still their policy. Now, look at how carefully Barack Obama has vetted anybody who wanted a job. I mean, 300,000 applications, and they had to fill out how many pages of forms? How carefully did the inaugural committee vet Rick Warren? Not too careful. I mean, we also had, as has been pointed out, that Warren said that it's the legitimate role of the government to permit assassination when it was suggested on Fox TV by Sean Hannity.
He's one of those CBN types, you know, Pat Robertson type.
Right, that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad should be assassinated. Reverend Warren concurred. Exactly like Pat Robertson. He said the Bible that puts God on government on earth to punish evildoers. So this, I mean, imagine if we had a foreign leader ask a cleric to do some honorific like this, who had called for the assassination of an American president.
Exactly, intolerance.
It's going to hurt our foreign policy. But aside from all of the unsuitability of Rick Warren and all of the terrible things he said, should we have prayer at the inauguration, Dan?
Of course not. Our Constitution gives the oath of office for the president, which is totally secular, does not have the words, "So help me God," or even mention a Bible. We are a secular, democratic, constitutional republic, and we, as a secular people, should not be endorsing religion in any of our public ceremonies.
So we at the Freedom From Religion Foundation have written Barack Obama, president-elect, as we write every president-elect and have done so for 30 years, a very courteous letter reminding them that the oath of office that they're taking is to preserve, protect, and defend the U.S. Constitution, and that it is, in fact, a secular constitution, a godless constitution. And we would like them to use the wording given in the Constitution. I mean, think how our founders must have thought this was terribly important, that they actually dictated the oath of office. And it says swear or affirm. It asks the president to swear or affirm. And there is no reference to So Help Me God. There is no Bible. And yet Barack Obama this past week announced that he was going to trot out the 1861 Bible used by President Lincoln. And of course, President Lincoln was not a Christian. He did love to trot out the word God. He invoked deity frequently.
But there's that Illinois connection. You know,
there's the Illinois connection. But later, after the war was over, President Lincoln gave that very historic speech in which he pointed out that the North and the South both prayed to the same God and read the same Bible. This is up in the Lincoln Memorial. I think he would have rethought putting his hand on a Bible. And Barack Obama, comes from a mixed heritage and should be sensitive to the fact that had the Bible not been part of our nation, if it had not been believed in, we probably would have avoided that bloody civil war, because the Bible actually teaches that you can have slaves.
The authority of our Constitution, unlike any others before that and many since that, is not based on a sovereign or a monarch or a lord or a king. It's based on we the people. But that Bible that he's going to put his hand on does not permit we the people to govern ourselves. The Declaration of Independence talks about the consent of the governed, which is a wonderful American principle, but in the Bible, you don't find democracy. He's going to put his hand on a Bible that puts down the consent of the government. There's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death, the Bible says. We are worms, we are sinners. Lean not on your own understanding. The Bible is anti-American.
Anti-democratic.
Exactly, and yet he's putting his hand on the wrong document.
And also, let's just analyze some of the defenses that we've heard from Barack Obama, because there's been quite a firestorm over the selection of Reverend Warren. And he said, for example, that this shows that we're diverse and noisy and opinionated. I would like a little less noise from the religious right and a little more diversity here, because he didn't invite onto the stage prominent atheists and Wiccans and Unitarians and Jews.
We could make some noise.
And some Christian ministers. He simply invited two Christian ministers. And all that shows is orthodoxy. That does not show diversity. And just because one is liberal and one is conservative, they do not cancel each other out. So you're getting a scoop here today that the Freedom From Religion Foundation will be suing, with Michael Newdow's help, the emergency room doctor and attorney, part-time attorney, and other members of our group.
And he's sued on the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes,
he's the guy who's
sued
on the
Pledge. We'll be suing over the inauguration prayers. We don't know whether we'll win, but we just think it's awfully important to call attention to the fact that there does not need to be worship or religion at the inauguration. We would not be complaining if there was a private ceremony in a church, a home, after the formal swearing in. Let the president do what he likes. Let him invite who he wants.
Should he invite you, Annie Laurie, to
But if he at the inauguration, when it's the official inauguration, when he's actually being sworn in to open it with Reverend Rick Warren, to close it with another Christian minister, not to show any diversity, any understanding of separation of church and state, this is what we want to educate about. And so we'll be filing a federal lawsuit. You'll be reading about it, and that should be fun.
Well, it's a real insult.
And we also think that, you know, we should not be rewarding a divisive figurehead like Reverend Warren. And it is an affront not only to gay Americans and feminists, but to supporters of our Constitution and to anyone who is concerned about nipping in the bud our country's road trip to theocracy, which is what it looks like that inauguration is more like these days.
We'll be right back. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And after the break, we'll see how the media in Little Rock are treating the Beware of Dogma billboard just erected by the Freedom from Religion Foundation in Arkansas just this past week to combat some state church violations.
Yeah, namely a nativity display on their Capitol grounds, which we have been very frustrated and locals have been frustrated at trying to remove. And we'll also be listening in a couple minutes to Prop 8, the musical, and it's a lot of fun, so stay tuned.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
You're listening to Free Thought Radio, co-hosted by Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. That's a little bit of Auld Lang Syne. Before we get to Proposition 8, the musical, we're going to listen to a report by Fox TV in Little Rock, Arkansas, about the Freedom from Religion Foundation's newest billboard, Beware of Dogma, just erected this past week in Little Rock.
Controversial billboard is up right now in downtown Little Rock. The group that designed it wants Arkansans to imagine a world without organized religion. Fox 16's Justin Early joins us now live. Justin, what are people saying about this new billboard?
You know, I've talked to some average Joes on the street here. I've talked to religious leaders, and a lot of them say they're not outwardly offended by it. They just don't really pay attention to it. Take a look at the video. You'll see what it says. The sign says, "Beware of dogma." Of course, dogma referring to religion and religious fervor. And a group called the Freedom from Religion Foundation put that up. It is on the Main Street Bridge headed to North Little Rock from Little Rock. Now, the Free Thinkers of Central Arkansas worked with that Freedom from Religion Foundation to bring that sign here. They want to let other agnostics, atheists, and secular humanists in Central Arkansas know that they're not alone. There are others. But they also want to get everyone to question their religious beliefs and think about why they believe what they do. A lot of the Christians that I spoke with today say while they certainly don't agree with the idea behind the sign, they say it's one of those things that happens, rather, when you live in a free society with freedom of religion, but it certainly will not impact the way they celebrate Christmas this year. Live in Little Rock, Justin Early, Fox 16 News.
Justin, thank you for that. Freedom of Religion Foundation has about 13,000 members nationwide. It is dedicated to the separation of church and state and has filed hundreds of lawsuits based on the First Amendment.
Well, about 40 lawsuits.
We promised you some irreverent theatrical clips. Let's listen to Prop 8, the musical, starring actor Jack Black as Jesus and a cast of comedians and actors, including John C. Reilly, Margaret Cho, Maya Rudolph from Saturday Night Live, Neil Patrick Harris, and many others. Right after the election, they got together to put on this short show to fight back. And you'll notice the heavy emphasis paid to the separation between church and state.
It's a brand new bright Obama day. What a time to be
black, a girl,
or gay.
No, nothing could go wrong. So join us in this song of happy days for the gays. Nothing can go wrong.
Look, nobody's watching. It's time to spread some hate and put it in the Constitution.
Now, how?
Proposition 8.
Proposition 8.
Great!
People, listen to our plea. They'll teach kids about
sodomy.
Sodomy.
That wasn't right. That's a lie.
But it works, so we don't care.
Now you wish we'd all shut up,
but make our clothes and fix our hair.
And our love's not a sin.
Well, the Bible says it so.
Well, the Bible says a lot of things, you know.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, how's it going?
Jesus, doesn't the Bible say these people are an abomination?
Abomination? Yeah, but you know, it says the exact same thing about this shrimp cocktail.
Shrimp cocktail?
Leviticus says shellfish is an abomination. Abomination?
What else does the Bible say, Jesus?
The Bible says a lot of interesting things. Like you can stone your wife or sell your daughter into slavery.
Well, we ignore those verses.
Well, then, friend, it seems to me you pick and choose.
We pick and choose.
Well, please choose love instead of hate. Besides, your nation was built on separation of church and state. See you later, sinners.
Bye, Jesus.
I love you, Jesus.
You know, here's another thought to wrap things up. Oh, every time a gay or lesbian finds love at the parade, there's money to be made.
He's right!
It's time to groom, say, paint that wedding hall, and lavender's the shade. There's money to be made.
That's a point!
Think of all the carriages and four white horses. There's millions lost from all your disapproving.
Well, that's not good.
Think of all the lawyers for the gay divorces. Think of the tattoo removing.
We get it now.
We've been such fools.
I can see America's calling me. Yes, gay marriages will save the
was Prop 8 the musical, including actors Jack Black, a huge hit on YouTube.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back after the break for a more philosophical dissection of religion and listening to some choice clips from the great PBS broadcast play, God on Trial.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. or phone 1-800-335-4021. You're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're back with the second half.
And that's James Taylor singing Auld Lang Syne. Now we're going to hear an excerpt from the amazing God on Trial, which aired recently over PBS on Masterpiece Contemporary. Inspired by the legend that a group of concentration camp prisoners conducted a mock trial against God. The actors in this movie include Anthony Scher, Rupert Graves, Dominique Cooper, Stephen Delane, and Stephen Skarsgård. It was written by Frank Cottrell Boyce, and the broadcast was directed by Andy D'Emeny.
This clip is a French physicist. The voice is a little strange, you'll notice, as you might imagine if you were a prisoner in Auschwitz awaiting your death.
How many stars are there in the universe, do you think? Excuse me, but before I died, I was a physicist in Paris. There are 100,000 million stars in our galaxy. Just in our galaxy. And did God make all those stars?
Well, certainly, the prophet Amos
what for?
Tells us... Excuse me?
He made 100,000 million stars in our galaxy locally. How many of them have planets we don't know? And yet, his whole attention is focused on one little planet, right down on the edge of an outer spiral. And not even with a whole planet, no. Just with the Jews. This man, who made 100,000 million stars, signed a contract with the Jews. Just the Jews. And not even all the Jews, no. Because Jews like me don't count. So tell me this. If he loved the Jews so much, why did he make anything else? Why didn't he fill the universe with Jews instead of stars? What's the point?
We don't know the point. It seems amazing to me, too, that in the whole universe, he should choose us.
It's not amazing. It's mad. It's simply incorrect. You born babies think they're the center of the universe. They think they make milk by sucking. They think the world vanishes when they close their eyes. They are wrong. In the Middle Ages, men thought the sun went round the earth. They were wrong. It's an illusion caused by where you happen to be standing at the time. And it's the same with God.
We're listening to a clip from God on Trial, concentration camp victims awaiting their death, debating the existence of God. Did God break his covenant with the Jews? And the physicist we just heard comes back with this exchange.
Do you think saying prayers is going to save your life? 4,000 years of wearing silly hats, and you're still on your way to die!
There's a wasp. It's called the Ichneumonidae. It lays its eggs inside caterpillars. The eggs hatch, and then the larvae of a wasp eat the caterpillar from the inside. They eat their way out of it. What kind of God would design a thing like that?
And yet, excuse me, and my grandfather, he raised fig trees. There is a wasp, and this wasp lays its eggs in the flower. And when the young are ready to fly out, they collect the pollen. They don't brush against it like another wasp or a bee or the wind. They stop and they collect the pollen. You can see them. And then they take the pollen to the other trees. It doesn't help them. They can't eat it. They do it. It is a beautiful arrangement. Surely God is...
Tell me. This wasp. Does it do this for all fig trees or just Jewish ones?
You laugh at me.
I don't laugh at you. Just ask you to look at things not like babies, but like men. Men of reason. Use your reason.
Use your reason. And now let's listen to the strongest speech, I think, in this movie, the God on Trial film, by another prisoner who builds up this logical tour de force into quite a finish.
The accusation is that God has broken his covenant with the Jewish people.
Who led us out of Egypt?
God led us out of Egypt.
Another question. Why were we in Egypt to start with?
Well, there was a famine, and so we took shelter.
Who sent the famine?
Well, the famine, we don't know much about.
God sent the famine.
So God sent us to Egypt, and God took us out of Egypt.
Exactly, sir. And later, he sent us out of Babylon in order
and
that we might
when
learn.
He brought us out of Egypt, how did he do it? By words, visions, a miracle?
Moses asked Pharaoh.
And when Pharaoh said no?
The plagues.
First, Moses turned the Egyptians' water to blood. Then God sent a plague of frogs, next a plague of mosquitoes, then a plague of flies. Then he slew their livestock, next a plague of boils. Next came the hail, which battered down the crops and even the trees and structures everywhere, except in Goshen, where the Israelites lived.
Still, Pharaoh did not agree.
And so a plague of locusts, and then the days of darkness, and finally, what?
God slew the firstborn of Egypt and led us out of Egypt.
He struck down the firstborn. From the firstborn and heir of Pharaoh to the firstborn of the slave at the mill, he slew them all. Did he slay Pharaoh?
No, I don't think so, because later...
It was Pharaoh who said no, but God let him live and slew his children instead.
And then the people of Israel made their escape. And then God drowned the soldiers who pursued them. He did not close the waters up so that the soldiers could not follow. He waited till they were following, and then he closed the waters. And then what?
Then the desert, ultimately the promised land.
No, the promised land was it's empty, a new place, uncultivated.
No, there were...
As is written. When the Lord thy God shall bring you into the land, you shall cast out many nations before you. You shall smite them and utterly destroy them and show no mercy to them.
He's shown us his favor. We are his people.
Now, when the people of Amalek fought Saul's people, what did the Lord God command? I ask the scholar.
Crush Amalek. Put him under the curse of destruction.
Was Saul to show mercy, to spare anyone?
Do not spare him,
but kill. Kill man and woman, babe and suckling, ox and sheep, camels and donkey. So Saul set out to do this, and on the way he met the Kenites. Now these were not Amalek's people. He had no quarrel with them. He urged them to flee. And the Lord our God, was he pleased by the mercy of Saul, by the justice of Saul?
No, he wasn't.
And when Saul decided not to slaughter all the livestock, but to take it to feed his people, was God pleased by his prudence, his charity?
No,
he was not. He said, "You have rejected the word of Adonai, therefore he has rejected you as king." So, seeking to please the Lord our God, Samuel brought forth King Agag and hacked him to pieces before the Lord at Gilgal. After Saul, there came David, who took Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite, to himself by arranging to have Uriah killed against the wishes of God. Did God strike David for this?
In a manner of speaking.
Did he strike Bathsheba?
In the sense that when they had...
Adonai said, "Since you have sinned me, the child will die." You asked earlier who punishes a child. God does. Now, did the child die suddenly, mercifully, without pain?
In chapter 12, we learned that in actual fact...
7 days. 7 days that child spent dying in pain. Did that child find that God was just? Did the Amalekites think that Adonai was just? Did the mothers of Egypt, the mothers, did they think that Adonai was just?
Adonai is our God, surely.
Did God not make the Egyptians? Did he not make their rivers and make their crops grow? If not him, then who? What, some other God? And what did he make them for? To punish them? To starve, to frighten, to slaughter them? The people of Amalek, the people of Egypt, what was it like for them when Adonai turned against them? It was like this. Today there was a selection, yes? When David defeated the Moabites, what did he do?
He made them lie on the ground in lines, and he chose one to live and two to die.
We are become the Moabites. We are learning how it was for the Amalekites. They faced extinction at the hand of Adonai. They died for his purpose. They fell as we are falling. They were afraid as we are afraid. And what did they learn? They learned that Adonai, the Lord our God,
our God is not good. He is not good. He was not ever good. He was only on our side. God is not good. Oh, at the beginning, when he repented that he had made human beings and flooded the earth. Why? What had they done to deserve annihilation? What could they have done to deserve such wholesale slaughter? What could they have done that was so bad? God is not good. When he asked Abraham to sacrifice his son, Abraham should have said no. We should have taught our God the justice that was in our hearts. We should have stood up to him. He's not good. He has simply been strong. He's simply been on our side. When we were brought here, we were brought by train. A guard slapped my face. On their belts, they had written, Gott mit uns. God is with us. Now, who is to say that he is not? Perhaps he is. Is there any other explanation? What do we see here? His power, his majesty, his might, all these things, but turned against us. He is still God, but not our God. He has become our enemy. That's what's happened to the covenant. He has made a new covenant with someone else.
If you've read the Bible, you know much of it describes God as a fiend, much like Adolf Hitler. If we emulate such a supernatural fiend, why should we be surprised to find such despots and tyrants on earth? If it's okay to sentence someone to hellfire everlastingly, that makes sending infidels to the ovens pale in comparison, doesn't it? That was a very dramatic moment from God on Trial. You can view and find out more at pbs.org.
And watch the whole movie to see what their verdict is at the end of the trial. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Today. We'll be right back with something more gentle, the secular words of the infidel, Robert Burns.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought Today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. You're listening to Free Thought Radio, co-hosted by Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor, and produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We just have time for Auld Lang Syne, don't we? Dan, whose version are we listening to?
That's the Duke Ellington version of Auld Lang Syne. And I always wondered what Auld Lang Syne actually meant. We sing it every year. And so I looked it up. Literally, it means old, long since, which was Burns' old Scottish way of saying a long, long time ago.
And I asked you, Dan, to have you read some of the words of Auld Lang Syne by the irreverent Scottish poet Bobby Burns.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot in days of Auld Lang Syne? For Auld Lang Syne, my dear, for Auld Lang Syne, will take a cup of kindness yet for Auld Lang Syne. And surely you'll buy your pint cup, and surely I'll buy mine, and we'll take a cup of kindness yet for Auld Lang Syne. We too have run about the slopes and picked the daisies fine, but we've wandered many a weary foot since Auld Lang Syne. We too have paddled in the stream from morning sun till dine, but seas between us broad have roared since Auld Lang Syne. And there's a hand, my trusty friend, and give us a hand of thine, and we'll take a cup of kindness yet for Auld Lang Syne.
We'll take a cup of kindness. Those are some very nice verses that you don't usually hear. And of course, Bobby Burns wrote some terrific songs and poems.
And what a great seasonal song for us non-believers. They totally secular, natural lyrics and natural song that we can all just enjoy. Whether you're religious or not, we can take a cup of kindness
but
together.
Robert Burns was not religious. He was a deist, but very, very skeptical, very critical of Christianity, very short-lived, so creative. And isn't this... He would just be thrilled, I think.
Yeah.
If he could have known that his song would be this annual tradition around the world.
In this last year, we've had 52 shows of Free Thought Radio produced by our great producer, Brian Tarani. So happy new year to you, Brian. And thanks for all your hard work. And our announcer is Buzz Kemper, who owns the studio, co-owns the studio Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin. So thank you, Buzz, for a great year of announcing. If you want to hear all the last 52 shows or all the last, how many are there now? Like 140 since we started? You can go to ffrf.org/radio.
I'm no good at math. Don't ask me.
You can listen to everyone archived, or you can sign up to hear it as a podcast.
And we invite you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation or just ask for more information at ffrf.org. And we have complimentary issues of the December issue of Free Thought Today. There are some fascinating speeches by our atheist in the foxhole, a recipient this year, Jeremy Hall. Webster Cook, who's been on this show, Jeremy's been on this show. Webster talking about how they went after him when he didn't swallow a communion wafer. Lots of information, lots of photos. So we hope that you'll ask for a copy and that you'll join today. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting. And our guest will be the indomitable legal beagle, Michael Newdow. We'll be talking about his and our new lawsuit to challenge prayer at the presidential inauguration. And until then, we'll take a cup of kindness.
Yeah.